Imagine buying a like a state-of-the-art titanium-reinforced bank vault, right? You want to store your most valuable assets.
Right, going all out on security.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You hire guards, you install cameras, biometric scanners, the works, and then a few months later, you find out the manufacturer left a default skeleton key hidden inside the hinges of the door.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they just assumed you'd eventually change the primary locks. So the vault itself is mathematically impenetrable, sure, but anyone who knows to check the hinges can simply bypass the entire security system and just, walk right in.
And see, the danger there isn't that the vault was poorly constructed. I mean, the danger is that assumption, the assumption that the default configuration would naturally be replaced by the end user.
Which we know never happens.
Right, never happens.
Yeah.
Because when administrators deploy complex systems, they're usually just prioritizing getting them running, or locking down every single theoretical edge case. And threat actors are just uniquely skilled at finding those forgotten skeleton keys.
They really are. Well, welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. If you are joining us today, you are looking to cut through the absolute noise of a daily threat landscape. Today, our focus is squarely on Defender Actions. We are providing a concise, high-signal cybersecurity briefing.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise out there right now, so we need to focus on what actually matters.
Exactly. We are unpacking a triad of urgent active threats pulled straight from the latest intelligence sources. And we're going to look really closely at the mechanics behind them so you know exactly how to protect your own environments.
It's all about what you can do right now to secure your infrastructure.
Okay, let's unpack this. We're going to explore a critical infrastructure flaw deep inside a major development tool, examine a chained zero-day brute force attack right at the edge of the perimeter, and finally, track a poison web supply chain that bypasses the network entirely to burrow deep into your employees' mobile devices.
And, what's fascinating here is that while these three attack vectors span entirely different domains, I mean, we're talking internal development pipelines, external VPN appliances, and end-user mobile endpoints, they collectively highlight this terrifying acceleration in adversary tradecraft.
Terrifying is definitely the word. It feels like they're moving faster than ever.
Oh, absolutely. The window between a vulnerability being publicly disclosed and it being actively, aggressively weaponized in the wild, it's shrinking to almost nothing. Attackers are reading the exact same patch notes we are, and they are moving immediately.
So, let's start at the absolute core of a developer's environment. We're looking at the software repository, specifically JFrog Artifactory.
Ah, the crown jewels for a lot of dev teams.
Right. For anyone managing software pipelines, Artifactory is the central nervous system. I mean, it holds the binaries, the dependencies, proprietary artifacts, basically everything an organization needs to build and ship software.
Everything is in there.
And right now, there is a massive fire alarm going off inside that nervous system. It's CVE-2026-82329. And this is carrying a CVSS severity score of 9.8 out of 10.
Yeah, and just to clarify for everyone, a 9.8 means we are dealing with a vulnerability that is network exploitable, requires very low complexity to pull off, and crucially does not require any prior privileges or user interaction.
Wow, so anyone can just trigger it.
Exactly. Specifically, this is an authentication bypass flaw that leads directly to full administrative access.
I have to push back a little here, though, because, well, JFrog Artifactory is an internal development tool, right?
It is, yeah.
It's supposed to be sitting deep inside a corporate network, hidden behind layers of firewalls and access controls. So if an attacker can already reach the Artifactory instance to exploit it, haven't you already lost? I mean, why is a 9.8 severity justified for an internal tool?
Well, that assumes the perimeter is entirely airtight, which, we know it rarely is,
Yeah.
and it assumes insider threats don't exist. In modern sprawling enterprise environments, networks are often just far too flat.
Okay, so once they're in, they can go anywhere.
Right. If an attacker compromises a low-level employee's laptop, say via a phishing email, or they gain a foothold through some forgotten VPN account, they suddenly have line of sight to internal tools like Artifactory.
Ah, I see.
Furthermore, vulnerabilities like server-side request forgery or SSRF on public-facing web servers can often be manipulated to forward malicious traffic into the internal network.
Oh, right, SSRF, so they just bounce off the web server.
Exactly. If they can route a single crafted request to the Artifactory server, this 9.8 vulnerability means they don't need to guess passwords or steal session tokens. They just bypass authentication entirely.
So, how exactly are they bypassing the bouncer at the door? What is the actual mechanical failure happening inside the software here?
It fundamentally comes down to that skeleton key analogy you mentioned earlier. JFrog Artifactory relies on something called a join key to manage secure internal authentication between its various microservices.
Okay, a join key.
Yeah, so when you initially deploy the software, those microservices need a way to trust each other immediately so the system can boot up properly. To facilitate this out of the box, if an administrator hasn't explicitly configured a custom join key, the system automatically falls back on a default mechanism.
Let me guess, they call this the phantom key.
Exactly. It's known as a phantom join key.
So the phantom key is essentially a hard-coded bootstrap mechanism meant for day one setup, and the software just, what, assumes you'll replace it later.
That was the assumption. The idea was that the fallback wouldn't be accessible to unauthenticated external queries. But attackers figured out how to interact with the service in a way that forces the system to rely on that predictable phantom key.
Wait, really? They just force it to use the default?
Yeah, unauthenticated attackers with network access are abusing it to forge their own access tokens. And they aren't just forging read-only access, they are actively minting administrator-level credentials out of thin air.
Unbelievable. And the timeline on this is what really stands out to me. Because JFrog released the patch for this vulnerability, that's version 7.16.1.20, on August 28, 2026.
Right.
But the security firm Watchtower started observing active exploitation of this flaw in the wild on September 4, 2026.
Yeah, that's incredibly fast.
That is barely 4 days from the official patch release to active global weaponization. But I have to ask, once they mint those admin tokens, what are they actually doing? Are they just doing a noisy smash and grab of the proprietary source code?
You'd think so, but no. They're doing something much quieter and honestly much more dangerous for long-term network integrity.
Really? Like what?
With those newly minted admin tokens, the attackers are methodically mapping out the entire environment. They are enumerating users, mapping groups, extracting credential sets, and documenting federated access topologies.
Okay, let's pause on that term for a second. Federated access topologies. Mm. For our listeners who might not deal with identity management every day, we're essentially talking about the passport system of a network.
Right. That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it, yeah. Federated access allows a user or a service to authenticate once and then be trusted across a wide variety of distinct applications and domains within the organization.
Kind of like how a passport from one country allows you smooth entry into allied nations.
Exactly. So by mapping the federated access topology, the attacker is literally studying the blueprints of the trust relationships in the network. They're learning exactly which credentials will give them a free pass into the HR databases, the financial systems, or the cloud infrastructure.
So they want to know exactly how the castle is wired together before they make their next move.
Precisely. They're doing reconnaissance.
Which means, as a defender, your immediate action item is urgent here. First, obviously verify that your JFrog Artifactory instances are patched to version 7.161.28 or later.
Yes, absolutely. But patching the software alone isn't enough if you leave the door unlocked. Upgrading the software doesn't automatically change a bad configuration.
Right, the phantom key could still be there.
Exactly. Defenders must ensure that custom join keys are explicitly configured in their environments. You have to eradicate that phantom key entirely, so there's no default mechanism left for an attacker to abuse.
Makes totally sense.
And because this has been actively exploited since early September, you must actively audit your logs. Look for unusual topology enumeration. If an unknown IP address or a newly minted admin token is suddenly querying the system for a complete map of all your federated access rights, you're likely already dealing with a compromise.
Yeah, that's a massive red flag. Mm-hmm. So if attackers are using these internal keys to map the topology, that sort of begs the obvious question. How are they getting inside the network in the first place?
Right, that's the big question.
To answer that, we have to move to the perimeter, where we are seeing an entirely different, incredibly aggressive approach. We're looking at two newly discovered zero-day flaws impacting SonicWall Secure Mobile Access, or SMA 1000 series VPN appliances.
Yeah, specifically, organizations running models 6210, 7210, or the 8200B virtual appliance are in the crosshairs today.
And these weren't found by external researchers, right?
No, these vulnerabilities were discovered internally by SonicWall's own researchers, William Perry and Adam Babis. But during their investigation, they realized they weren't just looking at theoretical bugs. Attackers are already actively exploiting these flaws in the wild.
That's always the worst case scenario. And they aren't just using one bug either. They're chaining both of them together to execute arbitrary code on these susceptible devices.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, the historical context of these specific devices is deeply concerning. This new discovery follows security fixes that SonicWall shipped just a month earlier for two other vulnerabilities on the exact same platform.
Oh, right. CVE-2026-15409 and 1410.
Exactly. And those previous flaws were heavily exploited by a specific, highly capable threat actor known as UTA-0533, and they used them to deploy the Knuckleball malware.
The Knuckleball malware, right. Well, I mean, the perimeter VPN is the ultimate prize for an attacker. It is explicitly designed to punch a secure encrypted tunnel through your outer defenses and directly into the internal network.
Exactly. It bypasses everything else.
If an attacker compromises the VPN, they don't have to sneak past the firewall. They are invited right through it. But I want to explore this chaining aspect for a second. Here's where it gets really interesting. We are seeing attackers linking multiple zero days together to achieve this compromise. Doesn't finding and developing a single zero day take a massive amount of time and resources?
It absolutely does.
So chaining two together implies an enormous R&D budget. Is this a sign that single perimeter vulnerabilities are becoming harder to exploit, forcing attackers to use complex combo moves to get inside? Or are they just showing off?
It's definitely not showing off. It is an absolute necessity driven by the evolution of modern defensive architectures. You know, 10 or 15 years ago, a single buffer overflow might give an attacker immediate, unmitigated control of a system.
Oh, the good old days.
Right. But today, operating systems and security appliances utilize advanced exploit mitigations. We have things like address space layout randomization, or ASLR, which basically randomly scrambles where code is stored in memory every single time a device boots up.
Okay, so the attacker doesn't know where to aim.
Exactly. And on top of that, we have strict execution prevention, which stops data from being run as executable code.
So the era of the single god bug that lets you just walk right in, that's effectively over?
For well-hardened perimeter devices, yes, it really is. To compromise a modern appliance, an attacker might find a logic flaw that simply leaks a memory address.
Okay.
Now, on its own, that bug can't execute code, but it successfully bypasses that ASLR randomization. Once they know where everything is stored in memory, they immediately deploy a second vulnerability, perhaps a memory corruption flaw, to actually inject and execute their malicious payload.
Wow. So they need the first one just to see the board and the second one to actually make the move.
Exactly. The fact that threat actors are deploying chained zero days against these SonicWall devices tells us we are dealing with adversaries who are exceptionally well-resourced, highly organized, and deeply motivated to maintain access to enterprise perimeters.
Which brings us to the crucial action focus for the defenders listening.
Yep.
You have to treat these VPNs as highly targeted launch pads. You cannot wait for the monthly patch cycle or the weekend maintenance window to address this.
No, absolutely not.
Defenders must immediately apply the new security updates provided by SonicWall to the affected SMA 1000 series models to break the attack chain.
And that's a really important point. The structural advantage defenders have against exploit chains is that they are inherently brittle. Because the attacker relies on a sequence of precise failures, removing just one piece of that chain causes the entire attack to collapse.
Right, you break one link, the whole thing falls apart.
Precisely. Patching even one of the vulnerabilities renders their multi-million dollar exploit chain completely useless against your infrastructure.
That's a great takeaway. Okay, so from the brute force attacks at the external perimeter, we need to transition to the sneakiest route possible. Because, you know, sometimes advanced threat actors don't even bother battering down your firewalls or finding internal skeleton keys.
No, they just go around the whole thing.
Exactly. Sometimes they bypass your corporate network entirely, poison the downstream supply chain, and then just wait for your employees to simply browse the web on their phones.
Yeah, and this one is a highly complex attack. It originates on innocent-looking web infrastructure and ends up completely compromising the kernel of an iOS device.
It's wild. Researchers recently identified 13 malicious composer theme packages hosted on Packagist. Now, Packagist is the primary package repository for the PHP programming language.
Right, it's used everywhere.
Web developers use it constantly to download pre-built code, themes, and plugins just to speed up their workflow. So a developer building a website might download one of these theme packages, completely unaware that they are installing a loaded weapon.
And the packages appear entirely benign on the surface, too. But they were engineered with a hidden payload designed to inject malicious JavaScript into the websites that hosted them.
Okay, so the website gets infected. Then what?
Well, in this specific campaign, researchers observed this code being heavily deployed on Vietnamese streaming sites. When an end user visits one of these compromised sites, the injected JavaScript initiates a mobile ad fraud chain in the background.
Ad fraud? So they're just trying to make a few quick bucks.
You'd think so, but the ad fraud is actually just a smokescreen.
Ah, of course it is. So what's really happening?
If the visitor happens to be browsing that streaming site on an unpatched iOS device, the script triggers a WebKit to kernel exploit chain to install advanced spyware.
It's just an incredible escalation. It's like an intruder breaking into a public visitor center, that's the WebKit sandbox, finding a maintenance tunnel via the GPU process, and riding it all the way to the building's central command room, the kernel.
That is exactly what happens. To break down the precise technical mechanics of that journey, we really have to look at the browser architecture. The initial JavaScript execution happens within the web content sandbox.
Right.
In Apple's ecosystem, WebKit is the browser engine, and it operates inside a tightly restricted sandbox designed specifically to prevent malicious web code from touching the rest of the phone. The sandbox is your visitor center.
But the exploit obviously doesn't stay in the visitor center. So how does a web script break out of a sandbox that Apple has spent, what, billions of dollars securing?
It pivots. It doesn't attack the core operating system directly. It attacks a secondary process that has slightly more privileges. In this case, the exploit targets a vulnerability in the GPU process.
The graphics processor. Why does that have higher privileges?
Well, the GPU process needs a higher level of privilege because its job is to render complex graphics and videos on the screen, but it also has to communicate continuously with the web browser to know what to display. So, by exploiting the GPU process, the attacker successfully escapes the initial WebKit sandbox.
Okay, so they've broken out of the browser and they are hiding in the graphics rendering system. But how do they navigate from there to the kernel? The absolute central command room of the device.
From the GPU process, the exploit chain leverages a second vulnerability, specifically targeting the Apple M2 Scalar CSC driver within the IOKit user client.
That's a mouthful. What is IOKit?
IOKit is the framework Apple uses for writing device drivers. Because drivers need to interact directly with hardware, they operate at a very low, highly privileged level of the operating system.
Uh-huh.
By compromising that specific driver, the attacker bridges the final gap from user space into kernel space. They gain full kernel read and write access, effectively achieving total ownership of the device.
Total ownership, just from visiting a streaming site. But I want to dig into the vulnerabilities themselves, because this is where the defender strategy comes into play. You mentioned this exploit chain relies on older vulnerabilities, CVE-2025-31277 and CVE-2025-43529.
Yes, that's correct.
We are in late 2026 now. Why would a highly sophisticated, state-of-the-art spyware campaign rely on vulnerabilities that were disclosed and patched well over a year ago?
Because the attackers know the reality of enterprise mobile management.
Which is?
Organizations are hyper-focused on patching their servers, their VPNs, and their desktop fleets. But mobile devices are historically a massive blind spot.
Because nobody wants to restart their phone.
Exactly. Employees delay iOS updates because they don't want their phones to reboot during the day, or corporate IT doesn't strictly enforce mobile OS minimums for bringing personal devices onto the network. The attackers are using year-old vulnerabilities simply because they still work.
Wow. So what does this all mean for the victim whose device is compromised? I mean, what's the actual impact here?
The impact is devastating. Once the attacker is sitting in that central command room with full kernel access, the spyware begins massive, silent data exfiltration.
What are they taking?
Everything. It accesses the keychain databases, stealing stored passwords for apps and internal company websites. It pulls saved Wi-Fi passwords, the entire SMS message history, the user's photo library, and active session cookies.
Oh my God. All of it.
All of it. And it encrypts all of this stolen data over a command and control channel. If that compromised phone connects to a corporate Wi-Fi network, the enterprise security tools will just see encrypted traffic. They won't realize the device is actively hemorrhaging sensitive data.
Because it just looks like normal secure web traffic.
Exactly. The downstream blast radius of a supply chain attack like this is immense. I mean, it started with a developer downloading a bad PHP package, and it ends with the total compromise of an end user's digital life.
But for defenders, the action item here is actually incredibly straightforward, right?
Yeah.
You must enforce strict mobile patching policies. You just cannot allow legacy operating systems to access corporate resources, email, or data.
No, you really can't.
The gap between an employee visiting a compromised website on their lunch break and the total compromise of their device, and potentially your network, is entirely bridged by missing patches.
That's exactly right.
Okay, let's pull all these threads together to wrap up our briefing today. We've mapped out three distinct battlefronts requiring immediate defender action. First, we have to secure the default configurations in our development pipelines, specifically JFrog Artifactory. We need to ensure custom join keys are set so attackers can't use a phantom key to mint admin tokens and map our networks.
Right. Get rid of the phantom key.
Second, we must patch our perimeter SonicWall SMA 1000 series VPNs immediately to break the chains of zero-day exploits currently being used by advanced threat actors.
Break the chain, stop the attack.
And then third, we have to enforce rigid endpoint updates to ensure that our mobile devices aren't falling victim to packaged-originated spyware that easily walks right through old WebKit vulnerabilities.
And, you know, this raises an important question for anyone managing modern infrastructure. How does a defender possibly balance all these fronts at once?
It seems impossible.
It's definitely challenging. The perimeter, the internal development tooling, the downstream mobile endpoints, they are all under simultaneous, highly sophisticated attack. It really emphasizes the absolute necessity of defense in-depth architecture.
Layered security.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We have to design systems where a failure at the perimeter, say a SonicWall compromise, doesn't guarantee an attacker a free pass to exploit internal tools like JFrog. And similarly, a compromised mobile device shouldn't automatically be trusted by the network it connects to just because it holds valid credentials.
It is entirely about assuming breach at every single level and building friction into the system. Which brings me to a final thought I want you to mull over today. It builds purely on that JFrog intelligence we discussed earlier.
Yeah.
We noted that attackers were using those minted admin tokens to rapidly map out the federated access topology of the network.
Yeah, drawing the blueprints.
Right. So how resilient is your architecture to that kind of internal discovery? If your central administrative hub falls, does your broader infrastructure inherently trust that golden admin token? Without question.
That's a scary thought.
It is. Or do you have secondary behavioral checks in place systems that analyze how that token is being used? Think about it. If an admin token that normally only updates code repositories suddenly starts querying the HR database and mapping the cloud infrastructure, does your system flag it? If the keys to the kingdom are compromised, does your network have the intelligence to realize the wrong person is holding them?
That is the ultimate test of a mature security program.
It really is. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into today's critical intelligence. Stay vigilant, audit configurations, patch those vulnerabilities, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.